As we discussed in our initial shiur, there are five components that make up the general mitzvah of kibud avaim. There is the mitzvah itself of kibud avaim, that we have kavides avicha v'yesimecha, but we also have ish imo v'aviv tira'u, which is the mitzvah that we are going to focus on today. The other ones were isurim. You may not hit your parents, you may not curse your parents, and you may not degrade your parents. But the two positive commandments were to respect your parents and to revere your parents. We're on page 66. No problem. Are to respect your parents and to revere your parents. And as we've mentioned briefly and sort of in passing in the other shiurim, there are certain aspects that we say fall specifically under kibud, which are things that are positive that you do. So you have to clothe your parents. You have to make sure your parents have what they need to drink, to eat, to wear. You have to take care of their needs. However, then there's also ish imo v'aviv tira'u, which is what we are going to delve into today. What falls under revering your parents? I think today it sort of goes against our modern sensibilities to say that one should have a fear of your parents. And I think, in fact, when we are going to look at the details, even though yira we usually translate as fear, I don't think we are meant to be afraid of your parents. Rather, what we are going to come to see is that it is also a form of respect, but respect in a different sense than fulfilling our parents' needs, which is the respect of kibud. So let's start. We are in source number 13 from Vayikra Yotet Paragimel, Pasuk Gimel. This is in Parsha Kedoshim, in the long list of what you should do in order to be Kedoshim Tehiu, in order to be holy. So we have in Pasuk Gimel, Ish imo v'aviv tira'u, a man should fear his mother and his father. The Pasuk then continues on, as is not listed in the book here, Ve'et shabtotai tishmoru, and you should keep my Shabbos, Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. And we discussed when it came to the idea, as we said, we've mentioned this sort of in passing. We mentioned tangentially when we were talking about the idea of whether kibud avaim applies when the parents receive no direct impact, that they cannot prevent you from keeping the mitzvos of Hashem, because although you are commanded to fear them, you and your parents together collectively commanded to revere Hashem. So that is the full pasuk, ishimo v'aviv tira'u ve'et shabtotai tishmoru, that you should revere your parents, but not at the expense of revering Hashem. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. So Rashi is going to explain what is this pasuk really talking about, and he is going to specifically pull out two aspects of the structure of the pasuk. So in source number 14, ishimo v'aviv tira'u. Kol achad michem tira'u aviv v'imo. All of you should fear your father and your mother. Zehu pshuto. U'midrasho. He said, this is the basic explanation, that each one of you, ish imo v'aviv tira'u, every single one of you should fear your father and your mother. Zehu pshuto, that is a pshat. U'midrasho, but on a more midrashic level, Ein li ela ish, isha minayin. So the pasuk specifically says ish, man. What about a woman? When it says tira'u, that includes two. Imkein lama ne'emar ish. Therefore, why does it specifically say ish? Why does it specifically say man? Shehaish sipik biyado la'asot aval isha reshut achirim aleha. A man is free to do whatever he wants. He has no one else's will incumbent upon him. However, a woman has to take into account other people's opinions and therefore is not free to do whatever she wants. Now we're all going to say, well, this doesn't sound too great. But what specifically is being referred to here by Rashi is a piece from the Gemara in Kedushin that talks about where does the responsibility of a woman lie in terms of who she must respect primarily. When a woman gets married, we talk about the fact that she very distinctly leaves her father's home and she goes into her husband's home. And a lot of the symbolism of the chuppah represents a new home that they are going into. They are going to build a new bayit ne'eman b'Yisrael. This is going to be a new family, a new home. So the question comes up in the Gemara and Kedushin about whether a married woman is required to respect her father still after she gets married, or whether she is only required to respect her husband. What if she can do both of them? And what if one comes into conflict with the other? That by respecting her father, she would be taking away from the respect she's showing her husband. So that is the Gemara that Rashi is picking up on here. So he is saying that the use of the word ish brings about this certain discussion, that an ish A man has the full ability to respect and do whatever he wants, whenever he wants. Whereas a woman has more responsibilities to take into account. Yes. Do we have a question? No. Okay. So a woman has more responsibilities to take into account. So that is the first point of Rashi, that it is specifically mentioning Ish rather than saying Isha, because we want to get the full picture that Kibud Avaim is his number one priority. Yirat Avaim is his number one priority. The second point that Rashi picks up on is the order of the pasuk. So the first was the specific use of the word Ish. And the second is the order, Ish imo va'aviv tira'u. Kan hiktim av le'im. In this pasuk, it puts the mother before the father. It is clear and apparent to all of us that a father would fear a son would fear his father more than he would fear his mother. But when it comes to the pasuk of kavid as avicha v'yasimecha, the father is written first. Because it is clear and apparent to all of us that a son would surely respect his mother more than he would respect his father. Because the mother is constantly there encouraging the son and speaking to the children, and therefore a son would surely respect his mother more than he would respect his father. So what's the interesting point that Rashi is making here? Rashi is saying that the pasuk is specifically speaking to human nature. He's saying that our nature is to be more afraid than of our father, and less afraid, or I don't even think afraid is the proper word to use. One would have more reverence for their father than they would have for their mother. And therefore the pasuk says, Ish imo va'aviv tira'u, places the mother first to remind us to sort of balance out that balance. On the other hand, we would more naturally show kavod or respect to our mother. And therefore, the pasuk says, "Kavid es avicha v'yasimecha," that you should respect your father and your mother. The pasuk is speaking to us as human beings and giving us the psukim in the way that it will most impact our way of thinking and our way of life. That it wants to remind us to balance out these inherent biases in one direction or another, to arrive in a place where we respect both of our parents and we have reverence for both of our parents. The Or HaChaim gives us a different explanation of the pasuk. The Or HaChaim tells us in source number 15, Odnir Elomar, Ta'am Sha'amar Lashon Yachid, the reason why it speaks in Lashon Yachid, singular language, Ish, V'gamar Omer Lashon Rabim, and finishes off the pasuk in plural language. Nitkaven Lomar, it wants to tell us, Ki Kishah Ben Yiyeh Yirame Aviv, Gorim Gamkein Shebino Yiyeh Yarei Mimenu. The Or HaChaim is telling us that there is a cycle that we are learning about in this pasuk. That if one respects his father, he will have children that are going to respect him. And he says, therefore, it starts with one Ish, and it ends off at Tira'u. That if one person shows the proper reverence, it will lead to generations of reverent individuals for their parents. Now, the way the Or HaChaim is explaining it, it sort of seems like a reward. Like, if you respect your father, then your children will respect you, like Mida Kenegan Mida. You did something, and therefore you will merit to have children who do the same. However, I'd like to suggest that the Or HaChaim rather is an explanation of the reality. That the Or HaChaim is saying that if your children see you respecting your parents, they are going to in turn learn to respect you properly. That it's not a reward. It's not like, oh, you did something good, so I am going to reward you with something good. Rather, it is a direct result of what you are doing. That if you are showing the proper reverence to your parents, and specifically, we are going to see what qualifies as Yiras Avim, these things are things that are really going to leave a strong impact on one who sees them. That if you carry that out properly, you are then going to merit that your children will learn from you, and therefore they will respect you in the same way as well. So now what falls under Mora Avaim? Now that we sort of have talked about the structure, the pasuk, what we are meant to do in a larger sense, which is to revere both parents equally so that we should lead by example to our children and to the future generations. But what actually is Yirat Avaim? So the Gemara Masechet Kedushin, source number 16 says, Tanu Rabbanan, Ezehu Mora. What is Mora? What is reverence? Ve'ezehu kibud. And what qualifies as kibud? Mora, Lo omid bimkomo, that you shouldn't stand in his place. Velo yoshev bimkomo, and you shouldn't sit in his place. Velo soteret varav, you should not contradict his words. Velo machrio, and you shouldn't make a decision in front of him. Rashi explains here, what do each of these things mean? Lo omid bimkomo, bimakom hamiyuchad la'aviv la'amod sham besod zekinim im chavirav be'itza. You shouldn't stand in your father's place where he typically stands in order to schmooze with others. That if he has a specific place that they know that everyone who finishes the morning minyan comes outside and they all congregate in the hallway in order to have extensive discussions about everything that has happened the day before that's going to come up in the day ahead, and you go and you stand in your father's place where he usually stands, that is what would be considered to be inappropriate. Sitting in their place as well. And we're going to go into each of these in detail, but Rashi tries to explain v'lo machrio. What does it mean that you shouldn't make a decision in front of him? Im haya aviv v'chacham acher chaluka b'divrei halacha. If you hear your father and someone else who is also a chacham having a conversation in halacha, v'lo yomar nirim divrei ploni. It seems to me that the halacha is like so-and-so. You are not there when your father is present to be the decisor, that you are not meant to decide between another person and your father. The Shulchan Aruch brings these ideas down lahalacha, gives us an idea of what practically this means for us. Eza mora, what qualifies as mora of Yirat Avim, lo yamo bimkomo hamiyuchad lo amud sham besod zekinim im chaverav, o makom hamiyuchad lo lehitpalel. What does it mean to not stand in his place? It is, as we explained before, that in his place where he stands to socialize, or the Shulchan Aruch adds in here, in his makom kavua for tefillah, that if there is a specific place where he usually stands for davening, you should not stand in that place. V'lo yashav b'makom hamiyuchad lo lehaseh b'beito, you should not sit in his specific place where he usually relaxes in his home. V'lo soter tvarav, you should not go against his words. That one we are going to go into extensively. V'lo machriya tvarav b'fanav afilu lomar nirin divrei abba. The Shulchan Aruch also qualifies here that it's not just simply if you are going to decide between your father and someone else and you are going to rule with the other person that you are not allowed to be the decisor. Rather, in any situation, even if you are going to say that your father is the one who is correct, you should not be the decisor in this situation. What does that mean? If you look in the footnotes below, it says that Poskim explain that this is because this is showing a sort of authority in front of your father. That there is the idea as well that you are not meant to give over a psak in front of your Rebbe. That if you are standing in front of your Rebbe, you should defer to him. He is the one who should be making decisions. That is a sign of your respect. This is a sign of your reverence for him and your acknowledgement that he knows more than you do. The same applies when you are in front of your father. That when you are in front of either of your parents, you should not be the one deciding, even if you are going to decide in favor of your father. To show that you believe that you have that level of authority in front of your parents is inappropriate. Finally, if we look on the next page, Gimel from Shulchan Aruch, Ad heichan moram, to what extent must you revere them? Hayaha ben lavush chamudot, v'yoshev b'rosh hakahal, uba'u aviv v'imo, v'kar'u b'gadav, v'hikuhu al rosho, v'yirakuhu b'fanav, lo yicholim, lo yachlim otam, ela yishtok v'yarei min melech malchei hamlachem sheyetzavu b'kach. So the Shulchan Aruch tells us at the very end, and again, we are going to have an entire section that talks about what if parents are actually chas v'shalom abusive. This is talking about a situation that is meant to give us an understanding of the gravity of to what point we are meant to uphold this Yirat Avim. So it says, even if a son was dressed in his finery and he was sitting at the front of an entire community, and he seems to be in a communal leadership position, and his father and mother came to him and they tore his clothes and they hit him on the head and they spat in his face, they totally shamed him, he should not shame them. He is not allowed to reciprocate. Rather, he should stay silent and he should have reverence, not if it's very difficult in that moment to have reverence for them. Rather, he should have reverence for Hashem, who commanded all of them in these mitzvot. So the Shulchan Aruch is saying we should take this very, very seriously, not just the idea of kibud, in which we must actually provide for our parents, but rather yira as well, that in yira, it's meant to show the attitude we have towards our parents, that it's meant to show that we have a certain level of respect, that our parents are in a certain way, they are the dignitaries in our lives, they are the important leaders, they are the ones who have provided us with everything, and therefore, they demand a certain amount of respect. And it's not just the respect of providing them with what they need, but rather it's treating them in a certain way. It's not contradicting them. It's not sitting in their place. It's not standing in their place. It's not, we're going to see, it's not about calling them by their first name. There are certain things that we are going to place a certain amount of distance between us and our parents in order to provide for the appropriate amount of respect that is due to them. Okay, we're going to stop here for 1 second and we are going to look. We have a question in the chat. Sometimes a mom and a daughter can be like friends when older. What would the Torah think about that type of relationship? So again, I was going to say that I don't think that according to our modern understanding of parenting and relationship and what's a healthy relationship between a parent and a child, we would of course say that having a certain level of closeness and kinship is definitely appropriate. However, the idea that all of the levels and all of the ways that we show respect to our parents would then disappear to allow for a like super chill relationship, I don't think is the Torah's goal. That of course the Torah wants us to be close with our children. The Torah wants us to be there for our children unconditionally, that our children should feel that we are always there for them. They shouldn't feel that we have a certain authority over them. But in the end of the day, the Torah does expect a certain amount of respect. That you can do all those things. You can be very close. You can be like best friends while still having a certain amount of awareness that there is a parent and there is a child in the situation. That if it comes down to it, there is one person who has a, we don't like to call it authority, because what is authority over an adult child? But there is one person in the relationship that does require a certain amount of respect from the other. And I don't think that those two are antithetical. I think that a child can have a tremendous amount of respect for their parent while still feeling a tremendous closeness with their parent. So I don't think they're contradictory. But of course, in that situation, when an adult child is trying to like hang out with their mom, it might seem a little awkward to have these boundaries of respect, but that you're still meant to be there. And if done in the correct way, and we're going to read all of the details, like what this really entails, I don't think it should disrupt the relationship. Okay, so now we are going to go into each one of these separately. Sitting in the seat, not contradicting a parent. And then the last one I believe you're going to address is not calling a parent by their first name. Okay, so sitting in one parent's seat. I think someone asked this question last week, that like their parent doesn't understand that they want them to like come sit next to them. They want them to be close to them. They're like, oh, but that's my father's seat. So I think this is one that can get a little bit complicated, but for the most part, I think they really understand the halacha. It's not such a barrier to most things that you actually want to do. So, we're in source number 19. V'legabe yeshiva berechav b'makom hamiyuchad la'aviv, misaber demutar. So the understanding is that you are not allowed, based on the Shulchan Aruch, is that you are not allowed to sit in a seat that specifically belongs to your parent. That if you come into the house, there's the seat at the dining room table, there's the seat at the kitchen table, there's the armchair that only they ever sit in. That is their chair, and you may not sit in it. This does not apply to a couch, let's say, where one day your parent would sit in one seat and the next day they would sit in another. This is if there is Abba or Ima's specific seat in the house. And everybody knows if that exists or does not exist in their house. That if Abba always sits in the exact same place at the dining room table, you are not allowed to sit in that seat. But if you are at a restaurant and your father sat down in one chair and then you say, oh, let's switch, you are most definitely allowed to sit in the chair that your father had previously sat in. That would not count as his makom hamiyuchad. However, the Psakim Uchuvot is asking us a fascinating modern day question, which is, what about sitting in a car? Like if your father is usually the one to drive, then by default, they usually sit in the same seat. So has the driver's seat of a car now specifically become your father's seat? De misaber de mutar. It appears it must be mutar. Ki bederech kal in the yeshiva shel kavod. This is not a place that your father has received this seat as a sign of kavod. V'chei mutar la'amod al kiso al kis'o b'mkomo k'deili tol davar mimakom gavoha. In the same way that you can stand on your father's chair in order to get something from a high up place. That you're not sitting in it as a means of like detracting from his kavod. You're not like, wow, I'm going to sit in Abba's special chair. If you just need a chair in order to reach something tall up, it doesn't really matter. That's just the one that's closest to you. So he's saying the same thing with a car. This is not a makom shel kavod. This is not something that you are trying to sit there in order to take your father's glory. V'mistaber de kemokin mutar lishkav al mitato. It also seems then that it would be appropriate to sleep in your father's bed. V'le'inyan liyashiv al kiso hamiyuchad la'av shelo bimkomo horo piskei zmaninu sheyesh lahachmir bazeh. However, the idea of sitting in his specific place, we do think that you should be machmir. Im nikar shekisei miyuchad la'aviv b'tfinato b'tzurato. If the chair is specifically, you can tell by the shape, the size, whatever it is, that this is your father's chair, it would be inappropriate for us. Today, we say that you should be machmir, you should not sit in this seat. Ulam im nir'eh she'in ha'av makpid al kach mutar b'shovi. However, if it seems like your father does not care, if your father, as we said in last week's share, if your father has been mochal on his kavod, then you are allowed to take him up on it and you are allowed to sit in that seat. So again, just to review, sitting in the parent's seat, l'chachilo, you should not be sitting in your parent's seat if this is a seat that is miyuchadlo. It's clear that this is their chair. This is the designated seat for the parent. And it's done in a way that is meant for kavod, that you are sitting specifically in Abba or Ima's special chair. If you just need a chair to step on, or you are going in a car where it's a specific seat, but it's not for a specific reason that it's their seat, or they have been mochal on their kavod, that they allow you to sit in their chair, then you are allowed to do so. I see we have one more question in the chat. Will there be more differentiation for a man versus a woman respecting their parents? So I don't think there's further differentiation besides for the issue of a woman respecting her father versus her husband. That I think that that is an extensive, lengthy conversation, but I don't think there's other specific differentiations, if that makes sense. Like we're not going to talk about like, oh, also a woman. In general, a woman is not different from a man in regards to this mitzvah. It's just in very specific scenarios, such as when she gets married, that then we say there is a differentiation, but not in other spots. Okay, does anyone have any questions about sitting in the parent's seat before we go into not?
I do.
Yeah, Deanna.
Okay, well, what if, my question is that I always thought that it didn't matter. You could sit in your mother's seat, but you can't sit in your father's seat. Is that correct? Because I always thought you could be lenient by sitting in the mother's. It's mother gets equal rights with that too.
Yep, mothers get equal rights. You birth them, you get a right to your own seat.
Okay.
Yeah, specifically the pasuk.
I didn't know that. I always thought for sure the father, you know.
Right. No, but it's also the mother's seat that it's equal in terms that we say specifically the Torah is trying to even it out, that you should respect both your father and your mother, and you should have reverence for your father and your mother. And the pasuk, what Rashi even explains to us is that it would be more natural to us to show a higher level of yira to our mother, to our father. But specifically, the pasuk wants to tell us that we should revere our mothers as well. So yeah, not the mother's seat either. Any other questions on sitting in your parents' chair before we go on? Okay, great. That was weird. Okay. Does anyone else hear an echo? No, it's just me. Okay, we're great. We're fixed. Okay, next is not contradicting a parent. So it says that you're not allowed to be so ter devarav, that you're not allowed to go against their words. So the different commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch are going to have a debate. With the Shach on one side and the Taz on the other side. The Shach and the Taz often disagree with each other. These are two commentators on the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shach is going to tell us, "V'lo soter et dvarav, bein shecholik alav, bein sheomer lecholik alav, near ein dvarecha, hevi soter et dvarav, v'nir'ed de soter dvarav, asar af shelo b'fanav." What are they debating? They are debating whether you're allowed to disagree with your parent when you're not in front of them. That let's say your parent is saying that they believe that the sky is green. In front of them, you're not allowed to say that the sky is blue. But the debate comes up, what about when you're not in front of them? Are you allowed to say, not directly going against their words, but are you allowed to say to someone else that the sky is blue? So the Shach again says, Veloso tzartvarav, bein shecholik alav, whether he agrees with his father, or bein sheomer lecholik alav, nir'ein dvarecha, or if he agrees with the person that the parent is talking with, hevi soter dvarav. Viner adds a soter dvarav, and it seems that for someone to contradict the words of their parent, asor af shelo bifanav. It is asor, it is not allowed, even if you are not in front of them. So you can't go against the words of your parents, even if you are not in front of them. The Taz, however, says, v'haya dematzinu b'torah chosha mishpat, shahatorah cholik im aviv kama pa'amim. What's interesting here is they are going to pick up on concrete examples that we see within the Gemara and within Poskim, in which a child disagrees with a parent. So there are a number of commentators that are commentator families, that the father was a Rav and the grandfather was a Rav and the great-grandfather was a Rav, and you see that the son in his writings contradicts the writings of his father. So the Taz says, we see this often with the Tor, Haynu shelo b'fanav, but when he was not in front of his father, kemoshe katav kan, dafka b'fanav aser. So the Taz says, we see in various locations that the Tor will disagree with the Rush. The Rush is one of our original halachic commentators, and the Tor was his son, and the Torah will disagree in multiple places with what the Rosh says. So the Taz concludes, and he says, when you are not in front of your parent, you are allowed to disagree with what they're saying. It's just if you're directly standing in front of them, you shouldn't argue back. And I think that makes a lot of sense, that we're not saying that children can never have any opinions that are different from their parents. A, that wouldn't be an aspect of Mora Avim, and B, that would seem very counterintuitive, that parents want to train their children to think and to understand the world in their own way, and to say that they can't have any opinions that are different from their parents would not seem to make sense. But the idea is that they can't be disrespectful and express their differing opinion in front of the parents. And the Shach is saying they also can't when they're not in front of their parents. So he's saying they really are supposed to agree with their parents, but the Taz is saying, which I believe logically makes more sense in the way that I'm viewing the halacha, that the Taz is saying that when they are not in front of their parent, they are allowed to disagree. So it's about respect when they are in front of them, not the idea of intellectually having to line up exactly with what their parents think and believe.
I have a question about that, Emma. Does it make a difference if it's like the example that you gave originally about the sky being blue? Like, that's a fact. The sky is blue. It's not green. So does it make a difference if it's a fact statement that your parent is just getting wrong, and it's not an opinion or an understanding, where yes, there could be multiple opinions, but you have differing opinions, but like when it's a fact, that's just like black and white, you're supposed to just go along with your parents and say, sure.
I believe so. So I think in that specific situation where it's like a fact, and where there would possibly be an opportunity to like correct what your parents are thinking. If your parents say it's Tuesday, but you know that it's Wednesday, I don't think you just need to go along and say that it's Tuesday because they think it's Tuesday. What I always learned is that there's like I think it's about the respect in that situation, that you're not supposed to contradict their words in front of them. You should be like, what are you talking about? It's Wednesday, not it's Tuesday. But I think this is the idea of like shelo b'fanav, that like when it's not right there in the moment, also not just only when it's not in front of them, but the idea that you can correct them. What I always learned is you should say like, is it possible that maybe it's different, that you're not directly contradicting them, that you're not saying you're wrong, but rather you're saying like, is there another possibility? Because I think, you wouldn't just have to go along with a fact that was completely wrong, but I think there would still have to be this idea of you're not supposed to contradict them publicly, that they are meant to be like the sort of like decisor in public. But when you're not in front of them, I think that there is a respectful way to say like, perhaps there's a different idea. I think if it's a matter of opinion, I don't necessarily think you are supposed to try to change your parents' opinion, in addition to not being supposed to like contradict them in public. But the idea of the Taz is that privately you are allowed to hold a separate opinion, and privately means just not in front of them. That it's not like only when you're like at home by yourself are you allowed to think differently, just simply when you're not in front of them. So it doesn't seem directly like you're disagreeing with them. You're just having your own opinion. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks. Okay, so similar, the Pitzchei Tshuva permits disagreeing with one's father when it takes place as part of a back and forth. Oh, sorry. We're in the Shevet Levi. So now they're going to have an interesting discussion about what about when it comes, and not only to matters of halacha. So we're going to say like there's a halachic disagreement, but specifically within Torah learning. And I think we have to understand that the culture of Torah learning, that I think when women learn Torah, we tend to like try to be a little bit nicer. I think there's this idea that if you walk into a base medrash, like you'll see the men yelling at each other, that there's this like full on disagreement and fighting about Torah. Now it's been known to happen with women, but I think we in general try to be a little bit nicer. So that's going to be the topic of discussion in the next few sources about what about disagreeing with your parent within the context of learning with them, that it's not your parent is making a statement and you're disagreeing with it. Rather, it's you're trying to have a discussion. And as part of this discussion, each of you is trying to express your opinion. So in the Shelo Tshuvot of the Shevet Levi in source number 22, Ayim v'chidushei ha-gaon Rabbi Akiva Eger, the remez l'divrei ha-be'er sheva sof Sanhedrin, de ha-be'er sheva sham rotel lomar. So he's explaining based on a comment of the Be'er Sheva in the end of Masechet Sanhedrin that you cannot contradict their words. What does this mean? Ritzono lomar b'milei de'alma. This applies in mundane matters. Aval b'dvar halacha mutter. But when it comes up to a matter of halacha, then it is allowed. Aval kfar chalku alav kol ha-rishonim. However, all the other rishonim disagree with him. The kemoshe katav gamkin rashi b'kedushin sham de'gam b'dvar halacha aser. So the approach of the Be'er Sheva is that he says that when are you not allowed to disagree with your parents? Only when it is general matters. It's things that don't really matter much. However, when it comes to Divrei Torah or Divrei Halacha, then you would be able to disagree with your parents. However, many of the Rishonim disagree with this. V'kimosha katav sham kin harashi b'kedushin sham degam b'kfar halacha asar, that you are also not allowed to disagree with your parents when it comes to a matter of halacha. V'chin katav morinu harav Rabbi Shlomo Luria. The Yam Shel Shlomo, the Maharshal writes this in the Yam Shel Shlomo as well. The Had Matzinu Harbi Machloket Avot Im Banim Bidvar Halacha. That we do see many machlokot between fathers and sons within the halacha. Mikol makom derech stira v'derech lashon hachra'a aser. And when it's part of, so how do we rectify this? We see many halachas farim in which the child who is writing the sefer disagrees with the halachic approach of their parents. So what he is concluding here is he is saying, to make a definitive absolute claim that your parent is wrong is not allowed. But to express a differing opinion, that is okay. That you are allowed to disagree, but you are not allowed to say it explicitly. You are not allowed to say, my father or my mother is wrong and my opinion is such. Rather, simply express your opinion, and anyone who is knowledgeable of what is going on in the other sources will understand that your approach is different than that of your parents. The Pitzchei Tshuva in source number 23 says as well, Ayin b'divrei atmos Yosef shekatav dehaben am ha'av im ha'am, sorry. Dehaben im ha'av yicholim lahakshot v'letarit v'lahasik maskanat ha'halacha v'im v'zeh shum soteret dvarav. The Pitzchei Tshuva tells us that a father and a son are allowed to fight it out. They are allowed to disagree. They are allowed to have halachic discussion in which they each take a very differing side, with the understanding that this is not soteret dvarav. Rather, this is part of the learning process. This is part of developing your own ideas. And this is not something that would be considered contradicting your parents. Because we have to keep in mind, as the Maharshal was quoted in the end of the Shevet Levi, that expressing a different opinion in a certain way, that you make it clear that you are expressing your opinion, does not have to come across as if you are contradicting your parent. But in a friendly, respectful discourse, one is able to express an opinion without it being that I am just shooting down someone else's approach. So that is the idea that they are saying to keep in mind, that that you are allowed to learn with a parent. That is a beautiful thing to do, even though it may bring up an opportunity that you may have to disagree with your parent, because the understanding is that that is part of the learning process. This is based on a Gemara in Masechet Kedushin that expresses sort of the path and the characters that appear when we are learning Torah. V'omer asher ha-gever asher mileyet ashbato mehem v'lo yeshvu ki yedabru et ayvim b'sha'ar. The Gemara quotes a pasuk from Tehillim in which it says that happy is the man who has a full quiver and that he shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies at the gate. What does this mean? Mai et oivim bashar, amara bichia bar abba, afilu ha'av v'bino. Who are these oivim bashar, the enemies at the gate? This is a father and his son, harav v'talmido, the father and the Rebbe and a student, she'uskin b'torah b'shar echad, that are learning Torah in one shar, in one gate, na'asim oivim zedzeh. That when they are in the throes of their learning, they are like enemies. They are yelling, screaming. They are disagreeing with one another. Shene emar et at vehav besufa. El tikris besufa ela besofa. Drishle sefer melchamo melchama sha'al yadi sefer ahava yesh besofa. That the Gemara says beautifully that when a fight or an argument revolves around the sefer, when it revolves around Torah, sofo ba'ahava, that you will end off in love. That's what distinguishes this process of learning and the idea of soter dvarim b'divrei halacha and b'divrei Torah from in general matters. Then in general matters, and we see this in so many areas, that when people disagree about relatively small and insignificant things, it can turn into this real source of animosity. That they come to fight over political matters, over cultural matters, that people really get at it. They really develop a certain hatred for one another because one holds one opinion and the other holds another opinion. However, in Divrei Torah, we say that through the process, it might seem like enemies, that it might seem like one is yelling at the other. However, at the end of the day, sofo ba'ahava, that when the disagreement is based in Torah, then the outcome is love. That when chavrusas fight throughout their entire learning together, in the end of the day, they are going to be the best of friends. They are going to be the closest of people one to another. And therefore, we say the ahava, the potential for love that can be developed through learning a father and a child, a mother and a daughter, is one that it is worthwhile to go through this process of disagreeing with one another, even though we wouldn't allow it in different circumstances, so that we can arrive at sofa ba'ahava. The Chazon Ish says that this is always the way that Torah has been learned. Nir'ed dafka b'lashon hachlata, aval l'tu'un b'svara v'lahashko shari shahari kol hatalmidim danu b'fni rabam v'satru divrayhim. He says this is always the way learning's happened. Some of the greatest rabbanim have had their students in front of them disagreeing with what they thought. That we have had this throughout history. And therefore, we say it is definitely okay in that situation for a father and a child to learn together. The Psakim in Tshuvot is going to give us a few practical applications in source number 26. The klal din sirat devarim et kol davar she'omer delo ka'aviv o imo kegon besipor devarim o b'deo b'nyanei hashkafa v'chol kiyotze bazeh asur lomar et da'ato imhi acharet mi da'ato hurav. So the Psakim in Tshuvot, Rav Nissim Karela, tells us that The klal din sirat dvarav, the general rule of going against your parents' word, who kol davar she'omer delo ka'aviv u'imo, is in every matter that he would disagree with something that his father or mother said, kigon besipor devarim, in telling a story, o b'deot, or in certain opinions he may hold, o b'nyanei hashkafa, or with certain hashkafic matters, v'chol chiyotze bazeh, asor lomar et da'ato imhu acharet midat, a child is unable to say his opinion if it is different from the opinion of his parents. And a child knows that this is not exactly what happened, or this is an exaggeration. He cannot go against his words. And we say that this applies not only to when a parent says something and a child verbally agreeing or disagreeing, but if a parent commands a child to do something and the child either says they are not going to do it or pretends that like they don't hear their parent, it says there is no greater disrespect, there is no greater going against the words of the parent than doing this. Unfortunately, I think this is something we really struggle with today. That I think there is this idea that obviously there has been an increase in chutzpah over the years. And we see that children just don't listen to their parents. And we might think that it's like, oh, they just ignore their parents. Like they put the headphones in and they close their eyes and pretend they didn't hear what their parents had to say. That's just as bad as standing up and saying, no, you're wrong. I'm not doing what you're saying. So this idea of like the no response is also a response of disrespecting your parents. So it goes on. And it would be the same thing, by the way, with like blue checking your parents. That if your parents are like WhatsApping you, there's this idea of blue checking. That when you read a WhatsApp, it gets blue checks. That you know that the other person saw it. So when a parent says, can you please go to the store for me? And a kid looks at the thing and blue checks it, reads it, and then put their phone back down and goes back to talking to their friends. I think that would also be a modern day application of soter dvarav, that they are going against their words. Vim eino soter dvarav aviv behachlit. But if one does not definitively go against their parents' words, mikol v'kol elam mash shemevi et ato b'derach kavod, so I think, Daphna, this is going to be like what you were asking. Like, is there a way, if you know that what your parents said is wrong, that if you are going to go against them, but not in a way that's definitive, like, is it possible that there is another approach? Or is it possible that maybe you got the date wrong? That sort of approach of not saying something definitively, of you are wrong, you said something incorrect, then that would be mutter. Or if there is going to be a possible negative consequence to the parent for not telling him what the truth is. Mutar gam kein letakno b'derech kavod, kedei shelo yavo lidei tzar, so that they shouldn't get into trouble. Like if your parent is 100% convinced that it's okay to just not show up to jury duty, that they got it in the mail, but it's just a suggestion, it's an invitation from the government, and they don't actually need to go. But you know that, as a matter of fact, it's actually a law and requirement that you have to attend. There, in order to not cause your parents the tsar that they would have to go through for not arriving, you can tell them, I think it's mandatory that you go to jury duty. So that would just be an example that if there is going to be tsar, there's going to be some sort of pain that is caused to them because you didn't tell them that they weren't correct, then you are allowed to do so. Or if you know clearly that the father wants to know your opinion, or the father explicitly asks and says, can I know your opinion on this matter? Then you are definitely allowed to share. Mutar lo marlo et da'ato afim hu haya ha'kufa mida'at aviv. Hafucha mida'at aviv. You are allowed to do so, even if it is the direct opposite of what your parent originally said. So to conclude that section, before we go on to the final section of Yira for this year, the idea is that you cannot be soter divrei aviv, that when you are in front of him, and some poskim say even when you are not in front of him, you may not contradict the words of your parents, that it is a sign of respect that you listen to what they are saying, and when you disrespect them, even in either in speech or in action, that is a complete sign of disrespect. The idea is, though, when it is within the context of Talmud Torah, then when it is part of a discussion, and you are not saying definitively that they are incorrect, then you are able to do so. So that really is two separate things, that when it's in Divrei Torah, it's part of the learning process. And when you are going to say not definitively that something is incorrect, but you are going to suggest that there is, when you are going to suggest that there is a possibility that it's incorrect, those are two times when you would possibly be able to contradict their words. In addition to if there is going to be a tsar, a loss to the parents, if you do not clarify that what they are saying is incorrect. Does anyone have any questions on that section? And then we'll go on to name calling. Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Sorry, Emma.
Yeah,
no problem. The concept of the whole disagreeing thing with parents, does that apply the same exact to one's in-laws?
In-laws is going to be a sheer in and of itself.
Okay, cool.
Hold tight.
Okay. Thanks.
Meanwhile, don't contradict them.
Okay. Try not to.
Okay, great. Okay, the last one is not calling parents by one's name, which tangentially, we're not going to go into today, but is a very fascinating concept in terms of shidduchim, because there is a concept that is brought up in the Gemara that talks about that one should not date someone, or date, whatever, should not marry someone with the same name as their mother or father. Where does that come from? So in Masechet Kedushin, in source number 27, we see Tanu Rabbanan, Chacham Mishaneshim Aviv Vishim Rabo. There are going to be two characters in our story. There is going to be a Chacham and there is going to be a Meturgeman. The Chacham is the wise one who is sharing a piece of information, and the Meturgeman is the one who is going to dispense the information. So if you can imagine, there is one teacher, and this teacher gives over a shir, and the Meturgeman is the one who is going to give over, who's going to spread more widely the same shir. So Tanu Rabbanan Chacham, Mishane Shem Aviv V'Shem Rabbo. He should change the name. He changes the name of his father and the name of his Rebbe. Torgeman, Eino Mishane V'Lo Shem Aviv V'Lo Shem Rabbo. He should not change his father's name, and he does not change the name of his Rebbe. Avodimain, what? Why not? Like, what is this person not a good person? Imale avuha de mitorgeman. Atu, torgeman lav bar chiyuvahu. Like, will we say that the torgeman doesn't have to change his parents' names? Ella amarava. What's really happening here? Just before we go on to the answer, the chacham is telling over a shir to the torgeman that the torgeman is then going to give over to the people. In the shir, the Chacham changes the name of his father and the name of his Rebbe. Why is that? Because he is not allowed to say their names. He's not allowed to say his father's name, and he's not allowed to say his Rebbe's name. The Torgeman, however, it says in the Gemara, Eino Mishane Lo Shem Aviv Lo Shem Rabbo, does not change his father's name and does not change his Rebbe's name. So the question that we're asking here is, what is going on? If the general klal is that you are not allowed to say the name of your father or the name of your Rebbe, then do we say that the Torgeman is not required at the same level as the Chacham? Ella amar Rava. Rather, Rava teaches us, Sham aviv shel Chacham, v'shem Rabbo shel Chacham. We are talking about the father and the Rebbe of the Chacham in both situations. Ki hu de amar bar ashi, ki hava de rish bepirka ihu amar avi mori, v'amure amar, hachi amar av ashi. It's telling us we're talking about the same father and the same Rebbe with both people. Therefore, it is the father of the Chacham, but the Torgeman, it's not his father and his Rebbe. He's just telling over what the Chacham told him. So, just to make it more clear, the Chacham says, I learned from my father, Avi Mori, and I learned from Rebbe Mori. He changes their names. He doesn't say their names. When the Torgeman gives over the shir, he says, I am quoting from Rav Ashi, who is the Chacham's father, and I am quoting from Ravina, who is his Rebbe. So we're not going to say, oh my gosh, the Torgeman said his father's names and his Rebbe's name. No, he didn't. He said the Chacham's father's name and the Chacham's Rebbe's name. So the lesson that we pull out from this Gemara is that you are not allowed to say the name of your father and the name of your Rebbe, but others can address them. It's not a matter of nobody can say a father or a Rebbe's name. It's you must show a certain level of respect to your father and your Rebbe by not addressing them by their first names. So Rashi gives further details of this discussion. Chacham mishaneh shem aviv. Chacham shedoresh hadoresh drasha berabim v'lochesh letorgeman v'hu mashmi mishaneh shem aviv v'shem rabo. Im ba'al omar dvar halacha sh'amar aviv o rabo l'chosh l'mitorgeman kach amar avim abba mori kach amar avi mori. So when someone tells over their father's name, like this chacham, they should change to avi mori, rebbe mori. They should not address them by their first name. Aval hatorgeman hamashmila rabim, he is the one who is telling over the words of the chacham to everybody else. Eino mishane ela mechnehu b'shmo v'almer kach amar ploni. Someone telling over your words is allowed to change the names back. Avu hadimain ein hamitorgeman mishane. Inami avuha de Torgeman, imulchesh lo chacham davar halacha b'shim aviv shel Torgeman, lahashmil rabim b'shim omro, lo yishane lomar, kach amar abba mori, ela kar'uhu b'shmo. Someone else can switch the names back. It's not the same sign of respect for us to not say your father's name as it is for you to not say your father's name. Ahu Torgeman lo bar chiyuva, lechavirat aviv avivhu, ki havei darash lepiyuka, v'lochesh davar halacha letorgeman b'shem Rav Ashi aviv, ihu amar letorgeman kach amar avi mori. We see examples of this in the Gemara, where one person will say, this is what I learned for Avi Mori, and then the Gemara will conclude and say, halacha is like Rav Ashi. Then the Gemara will switch it back and use the actual name of the Avi Mori of that person. V'amruha kishahu mashmi L'rab bim b'shim omro omer kacham aravashi ve'inu omer kacham araviv la'adunav shel chacham. We don't have to say, this is what we learn from Avi Mori of the chacham. Rather, you can change it back. So the Rambam, based on this Gemara, paskins like this. V'lo yikra lo shmo v'lo b'chayav v'lo b'moto. You may not call your father not by their name, not in their life, and not in their death. Ela omer Abba Mori. Rather, you should refer to them as my father, my teacher. Hayashim avivo shim rabo kishim achirim. So now this is the question that we are going to discuss for the next few sources. What happens if your father's name is the same name as somebody else's name? Mishana et shmam. You should change their name. And this is what's going to come up again when we talk about that situation of, can you marry someone with the same name as your father? There are some people who say that your wife or husband would have to, I think it really just applies, I have to check into that, but I've only heard of it in situations with where the girl has the same name as the mom. And I've heard of situations where the girl actually changed their name. So this actually does have practical ramifications. Mishanet shmam, you should change their name. Your Eli, she'in nishar b'kach ela b'shem shehu pali. So the Rama makes a distinction. He says, let's say you are in a situation and someone there has the same name as your father. You should change their name. But he says this is only in a situation where it is an uncommon name. Let's say your father's name was something super unique. You had never met someone else with your father's name. And then you end up in a situation where you meet someone else with your father's name. You should not call them by their name, because to you, that really only is the name of your father. People are not familiar with this name. But if there are names that are super common, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, all of the classic Jewish names, when you are not in front of your father, it's no problem to call them by their names. There's absolutely no problem here. However, the Torah says slightly differently from the Rambam. V'teimal ma shekatav she'afilu achirim she'shmam k'shem aviv she'ein l'krotam b'shmam. The Torah says it's a little bit astounding that the Rambam says that people who have the same name as their father, they shouldn't call them by their name. Rather, despite the challenge of the Torah thinks that what the Rambam says did not make so much sense, but the Shulchan Aruch rules like the Rambam. And the Shulchan Aruch in source number 31, V'lo yikra enu b'shmo, lo b'chayav, lo b'moto. You may not call your father by his name, not in his life, not in his death. Elo omer Abba Mori, hayashim aviv kishim achirim, mishane shemam imhusham v'shehu pali, imhushim shehu pali, she'in hakol regilim l'krobo. If it is a unique name that not everybody is called by, then you should change the other person's name when you address them. She'ina kol regilim l'krobo. The Ramah comments here, aval shem sheregilim bo, however, a name that people are used to, a very common name, mutar l'krot achirim shelo b'fanav. You are allowed to call other people when they are not in front of him. So when you're in front of your father, it still poses a problem, even if it's an uncommon name. If it's an uncommon name, we say it's a problem regardless. However, we say if it's a common name, like your father's name is Moshe and you're in the same room as someone named Moshe, as long as your father's not there, you don't have a problem. But if your father is there, then you really should avoid calling Moshe by his name. What is the idea here of the common versus uncommon? The idea is it is a certain level of respect to not call your parents by their first name. If you are in a situation where you are calling someone else's name, but the people in the situation could think that you are saying your parents' name, then that would be inappropriate because it would seem like you are violating that level of respect. So even if your parents aren't there, the idea of saying that everyone knows that your father's name is Antiochus and how many people's names are Antiochus, and you come across another Antiochus and you call him, people are going to think you're definitely saying your father's name because it's so uncommon. However, if you're in a room and you say Bob, and 10 people turn around, nobody's going to think that even though your father's name is Bob, that you're trying to call your father's name. Everyone understands the difference that it's common versus uncommon.
So I assume that applies to middle names as well then. Like,
what do you mean by that?
As in like your father has a middle name. It's not a common middle name. And you're in a room and someone has that name as their first name. But because it's not like obvious that you'd be referring to your parent because it's their middle name, it would be okay to say that.
Yeah. I don't think it would be a problem. And one of the sort of solutions that we're going to talk about at the end is about using a middle name in order to distinguish. Yeah, Devorah.
Ashkenazim, right? Because Spartan name after their living father, they name after their living relatives.
And hold tight.
Large family,
hold tight. It's the last source. The
patriarch could be Moshe, and then you have all these little Moshe cousins running around. So it's my son Moshe, my nephew Moshe, my other nephew Moshe.
Yeah, right? Hold tight. We're going to get to the end about what we do about Spartan who name after the living. So that's the last source in the unit. The Shach in source number 2 tells us, Shalo b'fanav v'hadrisha katav dela achirim afilu b'fanav im eno peli shari v'chim b'peli shalo b'fanav. So the Shach rules the same way. If it's an uncommon name, then it's im eno peli. If it's not uncommon, so if it's a regular name, then you're allowed v'chim b'peli shalo b'fanav. If it's a unique name, the Shach says that you can call the person by it as long as you are not in front of your parent. However, if it is a very unique name and you are in front of your parent, you may not call that other person by their name. So although we have seen that it is usher to refer by your parents by their first name, Rav Nissen Karela tells us in the Chutchani, the next source, that it specifically applies when calling or addressing him. But what happens if someone asks you, what's your parent's name? Or who is your father? So the Chachani source number 33, so they're calling someone up to the Torah and they say, what's your name? And then they say, what's your father's name? Are you supposed to like stand there awkwardly until they, I don't know, somehow guess it? Yeshiv b'lashon kibud. Rather, you should answer in a way that is kavod, that is b'chavod. So you should say, my father is Reb Shimon. Oh, Adon Shimon, the chayotze bazeh, v'hu adin im shoalim b'shar mekomot, kegon b'misradim v'chayotze bazeh. This applies, he says, if they ask you in an office, if you're in a doctor's office, what's your father's name? You should answer with a title. However, and then, Deanna, I'll get to your question in 1 second. The Yalkut Yosef, though, says differently, that it's sort of strange that if you're going into a doctor's office and they ask you what your father's name, like on a form, for you to have to say Reb Shimon. So he says in source number 34, im sha'alu otam ben miyata, o ma shem avicha mutar lomar ben ploni v'lahazkir shem aviv afilu below toar rabbi. You are able to sell it over. It's clear. They ask you, what is your father's name? No one is going to think that you are addressing your father by their first name. This is not a breach of the kavod. Rather, you're just trying to answer a question that you were asked. And therefore, you are allowed to answer even without this sign of kavod, that you don't need to say Rabbi Shimon. You can just say, my father's name is Shimon. Yeah, Deanna, did you have a question? Yeah. Wait, you're still muted. Wait, Deanna, you're still muted.
I have a question.
Now you're good. Oh, wait, hold on. Oh, Faye, you have a question? Well, hold on. Let's get Deanna's question and then we'll.
Okay. Okay, now I got my question. So, Sephardi, don't they name after the kid after the living? So
yeah, that's the last source. We're going to get there in a minute.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hold tight. Yeah, Faye, what was your question?
So what is this something that you're allowed to be like moshel on? Can a parent say to their like adult children? And also like in certain cultures, like I've seen in Israel, where in-law children are very comfortable calling their in-law parents by their first name. Now it's just that that's the culture that they do there, and that's okay.
Okay, so in-laws is going to be a separate question. We'll get to that in a separate unit, but okay. I happen to not think that this is something you're allowed to be mochel on. As in, there's no discussion in the sources that we have here, at least. I haven't studied all of the sources, but I have not seen a discussion about whether you can be mochel about this. Uh-huh. Except again, in that I'm going to have to get, maybe I'll get you guys like some extra sources for self-exploration about the idea of, can you marry someone with the same name as your parent? Because I think it does come up there. Like, can your parent be mochel and say it's okay for you to marry someone with the same name as them? And I think it makes sense that this isn't something you can be mochel on, because I think this is a real breakdown of the barrier of respect, that even if, as we said before, sometimes adult children, like, you're really, they're your best friends, but in the end of the day, it's a parent and a child. And even if you can let them sit in your seat for convenience sake, or you can let them, they don't need to stand up when you walk into the room. I think the basic kavod of calling you by a respectful name and not by your first name, it makes sense that that's not something that you can be mochel on. So I didn't see in the discussion here that you can be mochel on it. And I don't believe that it is something that you can or should be mochel on. Okay. Yeah, Jassy.
So my grandmother's name, my paternal grandmother's name was Sarah Rachel. She had two sons and they both married a Sarah. Now this was a very chassisha family. But my mother wasn't called Sarah, she was Sarah. My aunt was not called Sarah, she was Suri. So it was, and Bubby, I think, was called by most people Ruchala. I'm not really sure, because I never really heard other people calling her anything. But that's what happened in our family. And my aunt and uncle was a Shidduch. So they knew beforehand that this woman's name was Sarah. So right. Even in this very, very, very from Hasidic family, it did happen, and it wasn't.
Yeah, it's a really extensive discussion, and there are a lot of people who say either you just can't, like you, or that there has to be a name change or something like that, that they have to be permanently sort of called by a nickname.
It was just, I mean, that was what her parents always called her. It just, right, it's a glitzy honor thing that you say, oh, E, ooh, right, E. So,
right. Yeah, so but that may have not been by coincidence that everyone ended up with a slight variation of the same name.
I don't know. My mother was just always Sarah, even by her parents. So that was not a shidduch.
So maybe it was that avoided the problem. But yeah, I'm going to, Blee Nezer, I'm going to send you sources this week that you can look at about the idea of, can you marry someone with the same name as your mother? That's a really fascinating discussion. What?
Comment. This is Kara. Yeah. Hi.
Hi, so Kara.
It's funny. Hi. It's funny that we, you know, we're saying that it's so important, and obviously it is, but to have this respect for our parents and to not use their names. But if you think about the fact, whether Ashkenazi or Sephardi, that you name your kids after your parents at some point, right? And your relationship to your kids is obviously very different, you know, than your relationship to your parents. So there is some, you know, there's a change in how you start feeling about that name sometimes. When you're, right, you know, if you're so, but it's so funny, like I would think based on this, you might say you shouldn't name your kids your parents' name at all, because you're changing the respect that you have. You might change the respect that you feel towards your parents when you start using the name for your kids.
Okay, so to answer your question, let's skip to source number 37, the Steich Ahmed. The Steich Ahmed talks about Ufrat Likrot Ben Beno Al Shem Zikno. So it's saying, is it a problem to name your child after your parent, grandparent? Adaraba, zehu kvodo v'tovat hamit v'zichro kasher nahagu kin me'olam u'makpidim al zeh. He says, rather the opposite. This is the greatest sign of kavod that you can show to your parents. And it has been this way since forever, that a great, tremendous sign of kavod to your parents is to name your child after them. V'makpidim al zeh, we're very makpid on this. It's very important to name, because it's good for v'tovat hamit. The Matsinu Rabban Gamliel Hazakin Kara Ben Rabban Shimon Al Shem Aviv. We see that Rabban Gamliel named his son Rabbi Shimon, on because that was his father's name. The Rabban Shimon Kara Lebeno Rabban Gamliel Al Shem Aviv, and the Rabban Gamliel in turn names Rabbi Shimon names his son Rabban Gamliel because of his father's name. Rabban Gamliel Kara Lebeno Rabban Shimon Al Shem Aviv, and it goes back and forth, and we have Shimon ben Gamliel and Gamliel ben Shimon and Shimon ben Gamliel, and back and forth, and it shows that this goes so far back to show us how important the idea of kavod is, that we, while they are alive, we do not use their name, but then the greatest tovat hamit and respect that we can show to the person who has passed away is to name for them. But what Kara's saying is, like, isn't that a weird switch then, that you're so used to, like, you can't say this name under any circumstances because that's the greatest level of kavod, but then when you name your child, that's a very different relationship, and then you're using all of the name, and doesn't this in a certain way, like, belittle the name or just change the respect that you are really showing through the name, and wouldn't we think that maybe that's not the appropriate use? But what we're saying is the idea of the continuity, of the idea of passing on of their legacy and their name and everything that is associated with them, is much greater kavod than the kavod we are potentially losing by addressing them by name. So when they are alive, addressing them by name would be a way of sort of like bringing them down to your level of like evening the playing field. But once they have passed away, the idea of giving their name is dafka the opposite. It's a sign of chashivas. It's a sign of the respect that you have for them. So the idea of a name is extremely important in both situations, but the association with the name does change from one situation to another. So while they're alive, it sort of has one sort of association that you shouldn't use it. And then once they've passed away, it is everything that they represent. It is their name, it is their legacy, it is their midos, and using their name is how we show respect to them. Now for the question we've all been asking, the Chut Shani talks about, but what about the Sfaradim? The Sfaradim, they name after the living. Crazy story. One of my teachers, not only do they name after the living, but there is a very specific order in which they name. So they'll name first after the father's father, and then after the mother's father, and then after the father's mother, and then after the mother's mother. One of my teachers in high school discovered that he had a brother he never knew about because they were missing a child named for the father's father in the family, and one time got a letter in the mail addressed to that person. It was a crazy situation. This was many, many years ago. His brother was born with severe special needs, and the parents were told to send him away. So this son was born, named after the father's father, and then sent away, and none of the other siblings ever knew he existed. But once they became aware of, like, they were old enough to understand, they understood that they were missing a child in the situation. And it was a whole like path to discovering him. And it was really crazy. But that's always what I think about when I read about Sfaradim naming after the living. So the Chut Shani says, Sfaradim name after the living. How can it be that your father is sitting in the room and his name is Moshe, and you have Moshe 1 and Moshe 2 and Moshe 3 and all a million Moshes running around in front of you? How can that be? So b'kihi lo chakor in shem hatinok al shem hasaba hachai, ha'av yakra lebino be'ofen acher kegon haben shali hatinok shali. They say that a son should be makbid, that in front of his father, he should not call the son by the exact name as the father. So he should say it, either you should say my son, my baby, some sort of like endearing term, or in the notes below the source, they can also add an additional name. So let's say everybody's Moshe. It can be Moshe Chaim and Moshe Shlomo and Moshe Shmuel, and everybody can have a slight variation of the name and they can call them by both names. I believe the same idea applies in terms of using a nickname. So that if your father was Moshe, and your son and every other son in the family is Moshe. You can do Maishi, Maishala, Momo, every different way of saying Moshe, so that you should not be calling your son by the exact name of your father in front of your father. We did, though, say that not in front of your father, you are allowed to use your father's name, especially if it was a common name. So by nature of the fact that everyone in your family sharing the same name, you would be allowed to use that name when not in front of your father, but you should be careful when you are in front of the father. So to recap the idea of names, you may not call a parent by their first name when you are in front of them. When you are not in front of them, there was a machloket. What does it matter whether the name is common or uncommon? But the majority of the poskim agree that if it is a very, very common name, that it is not a problem. If it is a very rare name, then it would be a problem and you should avoid using the person's name. If you are asked directly, what is your father's name? You are allowed, it is better to use a term of kavod, like a Reb Shimon, but it is not required. You can just say, my father's name is X, Y, and Z. It is understood that you are not addressing your father, rather you're answering the question at hand. Then the question came up of naming children. Can you name children for your parents? And we say dafka, yes, even though you will be saying your parents' name. It is a tremendous honor for the person who has passed away. And then finally, we wrapped up with, but what if your father is still alive and you name after the living? And we said that in front of your father, you should not address your child by the name of your father. And again, in all these situations, I am saying father, but it applies to mother equally. So the same idea would apply for naming for your mother, addressing your mother by her first name. Okay, does anyone have any more questions about names or referring to your parents by their names? Okay, this has been a really long one, guys. Thanks for holding on. This is a long unit. Next week, we are going to be discussing honoring one's parents after their death. So we are going to be going on, I assume, with the idea of more about naming and more discussion about after your parents are no longer alive. Okay, have a good week, everyone.
Thank you, Emma.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Bye.